Hey, how's it going, everybody? You're listening to another episode of the Super Mercado Bros Video Game Music Podcast.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is a podcast where we share and discuss the very best in video game music. Once again, my name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann. Today on the podcast, we're looking at the career of one of our favorite composers of the 8 and 16-bit era, Naoki Kodaka.
He is a legend. He worked for Sunsoft, and he did some of the most memorable music that Sunsoft ever produced, and really some of the classic 8-bit. You know, when we think about the NES, this was a person who pushed the NES to its absolute limits. A legendary figure in the early days of video game music. Obviously, you know, anyone who's listened to even a few episodes of this podcast, it's safe to assume you've heard us talk about Naoki Kodaka, you've heard us play his music, so finally, we're going to dedicate an episode just on his career and on his music. So a lot of these tracks we've played before, but it's going to be nice to play these all in conjunction to really kind of talk about his unique contributions to the world of game music.
So of course we're playing in with the Stage 1 theme from Blaster Master.
Yes.
This is, I think, probably one of his most classic, quintessential compositions,
I think,
in my
most
opinion.
People would agree. And we actually, reason why we have it playing in, it's a good placement here, because we actually just talked about this very recently on our 1988 episode. So we definitely talked about it then, and we've talked about it before. If you're curious about that, if you haven't heard that episode, check that episode out and you can hear our discussions on this track.
Well, I think the thing that's important about doing these composer spotlights, in addition to just having an excuse to play some of our favorite pieces of music and listen to them and focus on them in a different context, mm-hmm. It's really also about exploring a person's career in, you know, shining a light on music that we haven't listened to before.
Yeah, so there's definitely some examples of that today as well, which will be really fun. And we'll get into it, but there's a series and a few games later in his career that I was very impressed by that I want to try to maybe explore and focus on, spotlight on in the future. So, yeah, we'll get into it. Let's just actually move. Let's just keep moving because we have some good music to play. I think now it makes sense to move on to, we're going to go chronologically through his career. So obviously Blaster Master wasn't the first thing he did. He did that in 1988. We're going to move on to a soundtrack that he did a couple years before that. This is the first game he's credited to. It's called Dead Zone. It's for the Famicom Disk System. This is the main theme from Dead Zone, composed by Naoki Kodaka. Cool stuff. You guys just listened to the main theme from the FDS game Dead Zone, composed by Naoki Kodaka. Interesting way to start off the day. Will, what are your thoughts about that track?
Well, this is a lovely little piece. There's some really kind of wonderful little harmonic and chord moves that happen in this track, which again just make me kind of yearn for the days of the 8 and 16-bit era when a piece like this, which could kind of fly under the radar, you know, it's not super attention grabbing, but you know, when you compare it in context to like an average piece of video game music now, you know, these harmonies are just so wondrous and magical and evocative, mm-hmm. and they kind of they bring to mind, you know, old Broadway and, you know, old romantic classical music and film music, and you know, it's kind of, I don't know, I think nowadays that type of writing is a little bit more hard to come by.
I also enjoy it too because as we'll get, you know, as we move on in the playlist, it's not what I think of like the typical Naoki Kodaka style of composition. Mm-hmm. This theme is a little bit brighter than when I think of most of his music. Sure. At least the games that he ended up working on, a lot of them called for a little bit more darker kind of rocking energy.
Well, I think that's what's great about video game composers is that they really are servants to the material. You know, they're asked to don many different hats, and depending on mm-hmm. what project they're working on, the tone of the music is going to be completely different. I mean, when you think about Blaster Master and let's say like Batman, they're two mm-hmm. completely different styles, both equal in terms of quality and sophistication, but I think a lot of people would have a hard time believing, you know, that it's the same composer just based on the aesthetics of the game. And that's one of my favorite things about Naoki Kodaka, because stylistically there aren't as many traits that you can point to. You know, he doesn't necessarily have, I think, as much his own specific style of composition. It's more that he's this chameleon and you identify him by the quality of his music rather than by the stylistic traits.
There are those chameleon tracks, but I think when we finish today's episode, especially when we get into the maybe the peak of Sunsoft's output, I think of the kind of like the late 80s, early 90s, there are a lot of soundtracks that were very similar to each other in
sure.
tone.
Well, I mean, I think you can think of a lot of composers that way where in a certain period, they're writing a lot of music in the same style,
and what's
but if
interesting,
you look at the course of their career, it's incredibly versatile.
Yeah, we think about the beginning and the end of his career, definitely very different music than what most people know him for. I wish that this was a person who continued, but I think the last game he's credited for was on the PS1 in the mid-90s, and that he kind of stopped composing for games, so very unfortunate because he's one of the biggest talents. So, okay, let's move on to the next game, and let's give some shout-outs. There are some games that he worked on in between. So Nozolar Land, Shanghai, the original Spy Hunter, which obviously featured licensed music very famously, Ripple Island, and then we move on to the next game we're going to feature, which is Freedom Force. This came out in 1988. Let's take a listen to Stage 4 Town, composed by Naoki Kodaka. Stuff. You guys are listening to Stage 4 Town from Freedom Force, composed by Naoki Kodaka. I love this track in the placement also today is because we're transitioning into Naoki's really rocking kind of maybe creative peak era. When you think about 1989, 1990, 1991, it's insane how many games Sunsoft released and how many titles Naoki Kodaka worked on in that time. So he's kind of entering into this new phase, and you can kind of hear him trying out some techniques that he's going to use later.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think something that I really associate Naoki Kodaka with, I mean, just being someone who's a fan of music of this decade, is really, I think about his sort of pioneering use of DPCM samples for the bass to, you know,
yep.
You think about like in Batman where there's
yeah, that's
like
something we're
going to
talk
bass.
More about when we get there.
But what's interesting about a track like this, you can tell this is a little bit earlier on in his career because the implementation is a bit more primitive, but even already you can tell he's not really content with the status quo of NES music, which would
no.
be using the triangle channel for the bass and the two squares for melody and harmony, because here the bass is actually done by the second square channel, the melody is by the first square channel, in the triangle is doing these like power chord parallel fifth harmonies.
Cool? It has
underneath.
A darkness to it.
Well, and did you also notice occasionally, you know, sometimes we've talked about the triangle channel will be used for like toms, but this track actually uses square. It uses the second square channel for these kind of like thuddy, you could think of them as toms or like bass drum hits.
It's really effective. Yeah. So another thing we're going to talk about as we move on is we're going to talk about the frequent partners and collaborators that Naoki Kodaka worked with. But this was in his early work. He did a lot more kind of solo stuff. It wasn't until the heyday of his work that he really relied heavily on those partners.
Man,
I gotta say
that riff was just so catchy. It's still floating around in my mind. That's great.
Yeah.
We've never played that on the podcast, so I'm glad we got to feature
it. Yeah, I don't remember if we have or not. We could have played it on the Sunsoft episode. It's hard to remember. Let's move on to the next game we're going to talk about. And this kind of launched, for me, the kind of the creative peak and maybe the... I know it's funny talking about this because it's still an obscure person for most people, but maybe the commercial kind of peak of when we think about Naoki Kodaka's music, what most people know him for, this kind of started that off. So this is Fester's Quest for the NES. And, you know, everything we're going to play today until we move on into later generations is all going to be NES.
I'll agree. I mean, I think the soundtracks he's most known for are Batman, Fester's Quest, and Blaster Master are like the three that I think
I would
are
say
his
Journey
most...
to Silius and Return of the Joker. I would add that. So,
oh, that's
so that
true.
That's what I'm saying. That this is starting kind of that
sure.
era. So, all right, let's keep going here. And we're going to play a track from Fester's Quest. This is Boss Battle. Let's take a listen. You guys are listening to Boss Battle from Fester's Quest for the NES. And you can already hear, you know, moving on from the last game we were talking about, technically a big jump forward. You know, just a lot more interesting sounds.
Yeah,
sounds
instrument that, switching all over the place.
Sounds that at the time, you know, you haven't really heard before, you know, and that's going to really continue as we move on. Well, let's talk about this track, and maybe you know the soundtrack quite well, Fester's Quest.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it kind of felt like it was, if you go chronologically through his career, it was the first time he had been tasked to use this certain type of like modulation or this certain kind of darkness in his music. Like there's a darkness and kind of this
right.
kind of grittiness to it that
yeah,
is appealing.
It's kind of coming into its own idiom. This Journey to Silius, Batman, Gremlins 2, mm-hmm. they're all of a very certain compositional style.
Yeah.
Which kind of has, a little bit of like chromatic rock. I mean, it's very Batman-y. I mean, it's perfect mm-hmm. for me. A lot of these soundtracks to me would fit well in Batman games, and it's one of the things I was so impressed with that score is that I felt like he was almost capturing a little bit of the darkness that Tim Burton and Danny Elfman were able to capture with in the film. But it's interesting because for me, I was familiar with that game in like Blaster Master first, and then I sort of discovered more about Fester's Quest and you know Journey to Silius and all those other wonderful soundtracks, and realizing that oh wow, there sort of is a similarity, like a thread between all these, and that they all kind of have that Batman-y sound just in terms of some of the melodic contours and that same like I think like kind of dark rocking nature. But yet, just to talk a little bit about the technical side, you're totally right about this being a step up. I mean, in terms of the drums, I think the part that's written, yeah, feels much more performed and active. We get much more instrument switching, so it feels like a more dynamic, I guess, 8-bit performance.
And also specific sections that were written, in my opinion, with the delay in mind.
Exactly.
Where it's like, okay, this is going to be a moment for that delay to kind of be the it's time to shine, you know?
Sure.
Because you really just have bass and melody and drums. And that's really all you need for that section.
Yeah.
You know, this is the boss battle. But again, you know, Naoki Kodaka's music has this personality to it where it kind of draws you in. It's much more engaging than most boss music of this era. So yeah, this is a really cool soundtrack. It's kind of a quirky one. Will, is this game any good? I know it's like fairly popular, but is the game good or is the game bad?
I think it's considered to be sort of mediocre.
Okay, sure.
I think it became a little bit more popular. Like the angry video game nerd talked a lot about this game, but I mean, you know, it's the Addams Family, so it's like a licensed thing. I think it was a game that a lot of people owned.
Well, some of the Sunsoft games were definitely not good. I think there's a decent amount that were pretty bad. But
I happen to really enjoy the Batman games. I mean, they feel a lot like
Genesis
Ninja Gaiden to me.
Awesome, yeah. So, all right. So, speaking of Batman, let's move on to Batman for the NES, and this came out in 1989, and it was a really busy time for Naoki Kodaka because right after this, the year later, and probably at the same time, maybe working on both, he had to do by himself the Genesis version of Batman. Completely different music, completely different system, having to learn the quirks of that system. But with this NES soundtrack to Batman, was definitely worked on with his very frequent collaborators. So let's talk about those collaborators. The sound programmers that he worked with a lot in his career and definitely need to be talked about today are Nobuyuki Hara and Shinichi Saya, as well as once in a while Naoshi Moroda. But as far as Hara and Saya, they were so pivotal for getting the very complex kind of Sunsoft sound to happen.
Sure.
We think about how advanced something like Journey to Silius or Return of the Joker sounds. It's a large part due to Naoki's composition and his music and those gentlemen's programming wizardry. So
yeah, no, that's a really good point, Carl. I mean, yeah, if any of you are, you know, familiar with, if you've ever gotten, you know, snag one of the NSFs for any of those soundtracks, you'll be familiar with those names because they're all credited on those incredible soundtracks.
All right, let's move on to Batman NES version. This is Laboratory Ruins. Let's take a listen. This holds up. I mean, 2016, this still feels fresh to me. And you're totally right, Will. This feels like tailor-made for Batman. It really captures that darkness of kind of the Frank Miller style
of
Batman.
There's also a heroic aspect to it.
Something we obviously should mention. We played this piece of music last week.
Yeah.
It was featured in one of the montages. I thought about, oh, we should probably play a different track from Batman today, but I think this is the best track from Batman.
Yeah. I mean, I also particularly love that opening cutscene.
Yes. It's also really good. But this is important because it's a stage theme.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, in some ways, the peak of Naoki kind of finding a balance between having something rock and be very dark, but catchy and fun, too.
Yeah.
And maybe not the peak. I mean, I think, you know, this isn't the track of the week, but it's definitely kind of getting him into that era that he is just so comfortable in. And
well, there's something so unique also about how all these tracks are implemented. I mean, we talked before about, again, this is not a track with constant triangle bass. I mean, there's some moments where the triangle is producing, you know, the lowest pitch in the track, but for the most part, it has its own kind of independent function. Like, for instance, at the beginning of the intro, one of the squares is doing that kind of 16th note riff. One of the squares is doing a low bass drone. Mm-hmm. And, like, what's cool is the triangle is doing this.
Isn't that cool?
It's doing this, like, rhythmic pulse, which I think most composers would just have that be the bass. And they might take that 16th note line and maybe give it some delay or something. But that's what I so love about the Sunsoft music. A lot of times it sounds like it's pushing boundaries, but even if it's not pushing boundaries, it really makes the NES sound unique because they're not kind of, I mean, talk about cliches. We just had that episode.
Yeah.
They're really not embracing the kind of tried and true methods of how to divide those different channels.
Sure.
It really feels like they're approaching every track from the ground up. What is it that we want to do musically?
It's so clear that these gentlemen at Sunsoft were approaching NES music in a very different way. And especially, they definitely, at this point, they still weren't satisfied with this. And that's why they incorporated those techniques we're going to get into later with the use of the DPCM.
Yeah, but let's stay on point about Kodaka's composition.
Okay.
I really love, you know, we talked about that little intro riff as being kind of a reoccurring pattern. I think of it as sort of the Castlevania type of riff where the bottom note stays stagnant and the top one has a melodic function. But it makes that intro so harmonically rich. I mean, that's one of the most captivating parts of the track. You know, it's interesting how sometimes, when an intro of a song can almost be the hookiest part, and then when you get into
come back to it. Well, okay, the form of this song is really effective because we come back to it, he fakes us out. Halfway through, you think that's over,
right,
but it's actually not, and then he modulates up. And that's a technique that is so common for any sort of kind of background action video game music where you kind of go up a half step and then go back down a half step.
Another thing I'm noticing, even though they're not quite to using DPCM for like bass, which to me was so revolutionary because that's like a constant
musical
figure. They
have it on drums here.
They have it for drums and occasionally, you know, orchestra hits. And we've heard that, you know, in soundtracks like Super C and other stuff like that.
Oh, Batman is just a classic soundtrack. Well, I would say the best version of Batman game wise for me is probably the Genesis. It's a wonderful game. It's really fun, and the soundtrack's really good. And Naoki Kodaka also composed this soundtrack, all new music. So this was a really busy time for Naoki Kodaka. Let's take a listen to one track from the Genesis version of Batman. This is Stage 3, Flugelheim Museum. Awesome. You guys are listening to Stage 3, Flugelheim Museum from Batman for the Genesis. This is composed by Naoki Kodaka. Gosh, I love this so much. He's definitely exploring the advantages that the Genesis has with stereo panning, with different timbres, the soft and the hard combining together, but it still feels like classic Kodaka. Will, what are your thoughts on this track?
Yeah, this is, I think if you look up video game music in the dictionary, you couldn't do much better than this. I mean, everything about it, the kind of rhythmic qualities, the specific chord progressions that we get, in the contours of that melody, not only kind of in terms of the intervals and what places it lands on the chords.
Those rhythms,
but
right?
Yeah, the rhythms are just so classic.
Oh, it's so great. Yeah, everything about this is winning. The instrument choice is amazing. And again, the way that he approaches, we're going to come back to the Genesis later, which I'm excited about, but the way he approaches his Genesis is different than any other
yeah,
composer.
Isn't that funny?
Different instruments, different use of drums.
In terms of the composition, you, by listening to it, you'd be like, oh, this sounds like something that would just be right at home mm-hmm. on the Genesis, like just so classic. But you listen to it and it's like, gosh, that's interesting. The PSG, they're doing like chord stuff in that intro,
yeah.
like in the middle. And so you have FM for the bass and yep. like the top voice, PSG in the middle. And then when the melody comes in on the left channel, there's the melody that's loud FM, and the PSG is doing quiet delay.
Isn't that great?
In the right channel. But
it's
what's so,
so
great about it is it comes across like you have the same instrument that's being delayed or in some kind of reverb. But what's great is what that PSG channel does, it actually changes your perception of the timbre of that instrument. So if you were to take that PSG out, not only would you lose the delay, but the instrument itself would sound different because it's the combination of those two. Kind of like if you have, you know, let's say like bassoon and piccolo, your brain
oh, yeah.
almost interprets it as
one
instrument, like a brand new timbre that's created.
Gosh. Yeah, every system that he works on. And this continues as we get, you know, later on in his career. The last, you know, couple games we're going to talk about are on different systems too. And he just approaches each system in a creative way. And man, is one of those people that I would love to try to look up his name and number and just try to have an interview with him. You know, he's one of those people that is definitely an obscure character now because he didn't keep working in the industry.
Right.
But gosh, he's so great. All right, now it's time to move on to... You know, these next few games we're going to play, specifically these next three, are definitely technically some of the most exciting and impressive uses of the NES sound chip that were ever to be. So
we've actually used it. We've done several different panels and talks about the history of video game music
yeah.
and the evolution of the NES. And, you know, whenever we're sort of talking about the different stages of how composers were able to utilize the technology, these soundtracks often come up in that discussion.
Absolutely. And it's perfect to move on to chronologically the next game that he worked on. It came out in 1990. This is the same year here. It's Journey to Silius for the NES, and very well known for utilizing what some people call the Sunsoft bass. Now, the Sunsoft bass, in order to get that to be a reality, we have Naoshi Morota to thank for that, for doing some of the work behind the scenes to get that to happen. We also definitely have to talk about in this game, it wouldn't have been possible without his partners, Nobuo Kihara and Shinichi Saya, doing a lot of the programming work.
Right.
It was such a great collaboration because Naoki Kodaka could really focus on composition. I'm not saying that he didn't do any of that other programming work, but we definitely know that those other gentlemen did that work specifically, and I don't think did composition. So mm-hmm. Naoki Kodaka is pretty much the lone composer. Journey to Silius is such an exciting sound. Obviously, technically, having that sampled bass, we'll talk about it after we play this track. So listen for the bass. Listen for just kind of the advanced use of all the channels and how lush this track sounds compared to what we think of NES. So this is Journey to Silius, Stage 1, Deserted Space Colony. Wonderful. It really transforms the sound of the NES. It makes it feel like arcade. It makes it feel closer to the Genesis. So hopefully you guys heard that sampled bass there, and it's kind of like it's kind of trying to sound like Genesis. Pretty much it's like sampling some sort of kind of sharp bitey synth
bass. It's like a sawtooth.
Yeah, and what it does on the NES is it obviously adds a lot of distortion and some weird overtones and things like that. There's some quirks to it. But the use of it here is wonderful and natural because it's such an active bass line, right. And that's actually essential. It's actually the reason why they did that was out of necessity,
right.
Because you can't have it sustain. It doesn't sustain very right. long. So the best way to do it is dun 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 dun.
Never stop. Gonna,
exactly. So it's
right because
great.
DPCM, there's like a limit. The longer the sample, the more compressed it will sound. It's sort of the general rule of thumb for how those 1-bit audio file samples were created.
Yeah.
But it's just it's an incredible pioneering feat. And what's awesome though is to me, like if I would have found about this technology, oh great, you get another pitch voice, how comfortable, now we can have, you know, 4 voices. But he doesn't even choose to do that. He uses the triangle nope. almost exclusively for the effect of the drums. But mm-hmm. it's so amazing because I think a lot of composers would use that technology to possibly rest on their laurels a little bit,
yeah.
to have a little bit more freedom when composing. But I think Naoki and the other composers that were also doing implementation, I think there was really sort of a conscious effort to use the technology to create the most impressive sounds possible.
Yeah.
And what's great about this, now we have a more authentic sounding bass and we have better drums.
We
and
do. Beefier drums.
Yeah, the nature of the composition is already full enough just with those 3 pitch
so
voices.
So if you guys don't know what we're talking about, what the drums are here in a lot of the Sunsoft music by this crew is noise channel mixed at the same time combined with the sound of the triangle,
so like,
and that's that beefy low sound that the noise channel isn't any bass. There's really
right.
no kind of low
it's
end
just
to it. So you're getting the low. It's the same way, you know, a recording engineer would treat a rock song nowadays. You know,
sure.
you want to combine the attack of the beater, you know, of the kick, and you want to combine the low quality of the drum itself. And
right.
when you combine those two together, it sounds like a kick drum. It sounds like an exciting, you know, full spectrum.
Yeah, just like from an auditory standpoint, it just makes it feel much more full and interesting. And also, not to mention the way that they choose to approach a lot of the pulse channels on these games, they're very uniquely created instruments. A lot of mm-hmm. times they one channel will sound like it has delay because it'll have multiple different attacks, almost like one note strike that's loud and another one right after that's quiet, and it'll be built into the instrument, so it almost sounds like you can have 2 harmonized channels that have delay on them.
Really awesome. Let's move on to another example from Journey to Silius. It was so pivotal and so important that it makes sense to play 2 tracks from it today. This is Stage 3, Headquarters. Such an impressive piece of music. It's iconic for this podcast. We've talked about this, you know, and panels we've done. It's really one of the most impressive showcases of the NES sound chip. It's an achievement that all these people were able to come together and make this happen. It's amazing, especially when you think about 1990, you know, the limited space, the limited technology they
and
had.
And honestly, the biggest part of it has to do with the nature of the composition itself. None
yeah.
of it would work if not only just that the music is good, but that it's written with the specific limitations in mind.
Yes.
That bass part is so wonderful. Again, it's trapped by the constraints of the lengths of those samples,
mm-hmm.
but you would never know that by listening to it because it's so groovy and in the pocket. And also, it's really, in a lot of cases, the only instrument giving the chord information because you have melody and bass,
melody
and that
bass
line is so crucial to establishing the changing harmonies. And that, what's another great thing, and this is sort of what I was alluding to before, that melody almost always has a really lush delay on it. So it's a little bit louder than you normally get with delay, and it's at least an eighth note behind.
But how cool is it here where not only is he kind of sacrificing the triangle in order to give thickness to the drums so that it forces him to have less chord material, he's sacrificing the second square wave channel for delay. Right. So it's like he's really ensuring that the melody and bass have to be catchy.
Well, what's so great about that DPCM bass, and when I say DPCM, that's the sample channel on the NES, it has such rich overtones mm-hmm. that it really, it sounds more than a bass. It almost sounds like the entire
power chords,
you know,
or something.
Yeah, the guitar section of a rock band.
You almost
really
hear
wonderful.
The fifth the whole time. It's really,
right.
it's
the
really
other
unique.
Thing that's great is I talked about the delay on the melody, but there's a couple points, bum, 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 and there will be those harmonized pairs, but those instruments have that kind of delay effect on them
yes.
artificially with volume.
They do.
That it's great because you go from using actual delay to having that effect, so it all still feels like it's
well,
part of the same space.
You know, the only other example that comes close to this as far as effective instrument switching is Mega Man 2. We talk about, you know, the textbook use of the different sections.
Sure.
They're all different functions. This track could be dissected that way. The opening, you have harmonized the pulse waves with the dynamics, and it's really beautiful
yeah.
and the vibrato. And then you switch to a completely different function with the delay, and then you go back to the staccato, the that part is
right.
just, I don't know, just
yeah,
expressive.
I really love, yeah, let's talk about that intro. Not only are the sort of dynamic square waves really impressive and very moody,
but
they create this kind of, yeah, they create this atmosphere that you don't often hear in 8-bit music, but compositionally, the way that it works, because the bass line really is kind of an ostinato.
It's a pedal, yeah.
It's outlining the same chord, but the harmonies created by the two pulse channels imply these different suspensions and moving chord progressions.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of, again, another great textbook way of doing a little bit more sophisticated rocking game music. It's
oh,
in that
man.
Same idiom, but it's like, it feels more rich from a chord standpoint.
Well, we're going to continue in the same creative headspace here for Naoki Kodaka. We're going to move on to the next game that we're going to feature today, and this is Gremlins 2, and this also came out in 1990. It's insane how much work they did. Really, some of their best work these guys ever did at Sunsoft. It was all this year, right? Gremlins 2, the new batch for the NES. Let's take a listen to Ventilation Shafts, composed by Naoki Kodaka. This is so good. You guys are listening to Ventilation Shafts from Gremlins 2. And oh my gosh, when I think of Naoki Kodaka, Gremlins 2 is definitely one of the things I think of. This track is so wonderful. Technically, the only thing I really want to kind of make you aware of here is that at least two, maybe three different samples that happen in this track. The bass, the snare drum, and toms. So there's actually a point in the groove when it's switching between bass and snare. Dun dun ka, dun 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 ka, dun 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 ka. And it's switching because it doesn't need to, the bass isn't playing on the backbeats, which is great. And then there's parts when you have these tom fills. Digga digga digga. And I don't know, it's so effective. The composition's really good. I'm gonna maybe let Will talk more about what's interesting about maybe the chord movement and what's unique about this track, but for me, technically, this is very impressive.
Yeah, I absolutely adore this melody. I think it's fantastic. I mean, if this was the main theme of the Gremlins films, I think it would be one of my favorite, it's, you know, film
Danny
themes from
Elfman-esque.
The 80s. It's so wonderful. If anything, it kind of reminds me of the theme from the Rayman Origins, Rayman Legends game. Kind of, because again, what's really happening in that melody, because we have to sort of talk about the chords to sort of dissect what makes sort of the odd, interesting notes of that melody work. It's that same kind of chord movement that Grant Kirkhope was talking about when we were doing our episode on Banjo-Kazooie, which is having a chord, let's say, on the one of a key. In this case, it's a minor chord. And then modulating to a chord built a tritone away. A tritone is what's called an augmented fourth or a diminished fifth. Essentially, it means that in order to move to a pitch a tritone away, it's the same amount of half steps moving up as moving down.
It's right in the middle, yeah.
When that melody comes in, you get that wonderful sense of, to me, it has this like devious mystery to it. And what's wonderful is I kind of think the chords were just an extrapolation of the melody. I think this melody idea really came first because he came up with dun, dun, dun. He really wanted that odd note, and to harmonize that fully, you get that wonderful kind of harmonic sound, and that's what's implied by the bass and the melody.
I have a strong suspicion that Naoki Kadaka worked on the piano when he was composing, because when you move into the music of other systems later on that we're going to get to today, it's so clear that he composed on the piano. So I wouldn't be surprised if some of the NES music was composed on the piano, especially knowing that he was in charge with the music and the composition. That was what he was the lead of, and the other gentlemen were in charge more with the programming. So because they had those duties, it makes total sense that he didn't have to write on the machine, you know?
Sure.
He was able to give them the music and they were inputting it. And it's really clear when you listen to Gremlins 2 that there were people that were just specifically focusing their efforts on implementation, because everything is just so polished, and the NES has never sounded this good.
Another thing about this track I love, because you have bum 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 bum, but when that happens, you have that da ba da ba da ba da ba da ba da ba, that little chromatic run. That's the kind of thing that just blows me over for NES music to have, and like a non-essential musical effect like that to take over a channel. It really creates this atmosphere that's so much more interesting.
Well, what I'm impressed by that little da 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 da, not only is it great, but it really sounds like in that moment, like xylophone. Like it's just, for some reason, I just hear xylophone. Like they really capture that
timbre. Well, there probably was a conscious effort to capture again, what's so great about him doing Gremlins and Batman is they both have that same kind of dark Tim Burton-y 80s feel to them.
And there's definitely intention behind that. Yeah, okay, one more track from Gremlins 2 because it's so great. How about Gremlins 2? This is Gremlin Battle. You guys are listening to Gremlin Battle from Gremlins 2, the new batch for the NES.
Notice how it sounds like there's four instruments there. It sounds like you have dut dut and then underneath these held pads, but that's actually just one instrument. And the instrument essentially has a quick loud attack, and then the same pitch sustains softly afterwards, but it doesn't have a new attack because it's the same duty cycle. So essentially, like, not to be too technical, but when you're creating instruments on the NES, they all have numeric values in terms of volume. So let's say the first ones, the highest it can go is like 15. So let's say the first attack is like 15, and then it drops down to like 4. So the effect, you don't hear an audible like sound of a new attack, it just kind of sounds like it's dropping volume. And since we're so used to in 8-bit music harsh cutoffs where most instruments don't have a decay, they're playing and then they stop,
it seems
it
like
uses
it's a separate
that to
instrument,
its advantage
yeah.
because it makes it sound like you have dut dut and then underneath a pad, but it's really
so
just
wonderful.
Fading down. It's so incredible. It makes it feel like much more spacious.
And you know, similar to the boss battle we played in Fester's Quest, this is so much more lively and musically interesting than most kind of, because this is pretty much a boss theme here, but it's so much more interesting than a lot of boss music that you get in this era. And
I love that.
It's very playful. Oh, gosh.
And I also really like the before we get to the loop, there's that kind of interesting, catchy, ascending riff. I really love that.
It's so good. Well, now let's move on to maybe my favorite Naoki Kodaka NES soundtrack. And it's really hard to pick a favorite, but this one is tough to beat. And they really were masters at this point. This is Batman Return of the Joker for the NES, and this came out only in 1991. And 1991 was also a really busy year for them as well. They did other games as well. One of the games we're actually going to play out with it was called Hebereki. That came out in 91 as well. But Batman Return of the Joker, obviously this wasn't based off a movie. This was its own storyline.
They couldn't wait for Batman Returns. They needed a new sequel.
Yeah, it was a year before Batman Returns. Interesting. We're going to play two tracks from this game. Let's start off with Cathedral Rooftop. Here we go. This. There's so much confidence that comes across in this soundtrack. You guys are listening to Cathedral Rooftop from the NES, yes, NES soundtrack, Batman Return of the Joker. This is music composed by Naoki Kodaka and also worked on by Nobuyuki Hara and Shinichi Saya. And one more time, that wonderful Sunsoft bass was designed by Naoshi Morota. So good.
God, those instruments are just so impressive to me. They had that kind of glop, glop, glop sound is created by what's called a duty cycle switch.
Yes,
so
the glop, glop.
On the NES, there's three different timbres that a square can have. Mm-hmm. But it gets more complicated than that because to create an interesting attack, you can actually start
switch
the instrument with
them.
One duty cycle and switch it right away. And usually there's like a little like clip, clip sound that happens
which
at the beginning
kind
of that.
Which is kind of intentional. It's kind of
and
one of the things
so I
you
think
want.
With this instrument, it switches between all three of them right at the beginning. And then after like a few milliseconds, it does that same effect where the instrument kind of fades down to become really quiet,
yep.
which makes it sound like you could almost swear that there's delay on all those channels, but they're harmonized parts.
Well, guys, I'm very excited to move on to this week's track of the week. It's another track from Batman Return of the Joker. When I think about Kodaka, this is, if I had to show someone one track of maybe his contributions, especially to the NES, because really when I think about his career, that's hopefully what he's maybe the most proud of, because the stuff they did to push the boundaries in that time is absolutely amazing. This is Deserted Tunnel. It's so badass from Return of the Joker. Enjoy. that just makes me move and groove. You guys are listening to Deserted Tunnel from Batman Return of the Joker, composed by the wonderful Naoki Kadaka. And at this point, I do feel like, at least, you know, listening to all this music, there is like a Kadaka sound. There's like this specific style that, at least in this
kind
era.
Danny Elfman-esque blues rockiness.
But what I'll say is it's the last time today we're going to hear that, because when we move on to
this, that's why I feel like that's not the that Kadaka anymore. Sound. That's the Sunsoft, you know, Batman.
The licensed
sound.
Sunsoft sound, It's just the games that he happened to work
on
needed
today.
This.
I mean, you think of Fester's Quest, that's kind of quasi-horror. And you think of the movies like the Addams Family, Values and stuff like that, they do have a more Tim Burton-y quality to how they're presented. You know, that, Batman, Gremlins, it makes sense that they would all sort of have a similar musical language when it comes to scoring the games.
I'm really excited to move back to the Genesis here for one of my favorite game soundtracks of all time. This comes up a lot on the podcast. It's so wonderful. It's one of the happiest, most positive soundtracks. It's on my phone and I listen to it all the time. Super Fantasy Zone, composed by Naoki Kadaka, and so different from a lot of the other work that he had done. It's worth mentioning that Hiroshi Kawaguchi composed the original Fantasy Zone for maybe the Master System, something like that. So some of the themes were hearkened to, but a lot of good original themes, the best new original themes were composed by Naoki Kadaka. And they're so expressive and wonderful. Let's take a listen to Mango. Holy smokes, I absolutely love Super Fantasy Zone. This is one of my favorite tracks in the game. It's so fun and expressive. You guys are listening to Mango. This is for the Genesis here, composed by Naoki Kadaka, another Sunsoft game. This is a shoot-em-up game, but obviously the music lets you know that it's a very different tone, very different style than your average shoot-em-up.
Yeah, absolutely. What's so cool is like hearing this kind of Latin-y tango, but done on the Genesis. There's something about it that still reminds me of Sonic.
Mm-hmm.
I think just because it's so rare on the Genesis to get a soundtrack that's this happy and positive and, I guess, child-friendly. I think a lot of the music on the Genesis really tries to be rocking and kind of hard-nosed. And so I'm always really kind of charmed by soundtracks that deviate from that kind of formula.
Absolutely. I think this game title is always a little confusing because it's Super Fantasy Zone. So I always thought it was on the Super NES.
Right.
But it's not. It's only on the Genesis. I don't think released in North America originally, just Europe and Japan, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I love that soundtrack to Fantasy Zone.
Have one more track to play from Super Fantasy Zone because it's so great. Let's play a really beautiful piece. This is Water Melody, composed by Naoki Kadaka. You know, listening to this makes me realize that Naoki Kadaka would have made a great Sonic soundtrack for this system, because like the use of the bass, the lively kind of punchiness of it. The melodies are so pure and beautiful, and they're those great pop melodies, you know, very emotional.
Very Koji Kondo-esque, actually.
Gosh,
it's so,
so
pure in sort of the big interval leaps and the pitches that it lands on. That sequence is so gorgeous. Its presentation comes across as very plucky and light, but if you really were to focus on the contours of that melody, it's one of the most beautiful melodies on the Genesis.
Well, I think so too. And it's also, there's something to be said of the choice of using the PSG to have the melody. Now, the melody here is PSG, and that's supposed to be nostalgic.
It almost sounds like a flute or something.
But I also think it's like a throwback, supposed to sound 8-bit. You know, there's something cute about that, especially in the context of having all the other FM instruments underneath it. So, really awesome. Well, now we're going to move on to this. Really, we're moving on to a series here, because we have two games for the Super Famicom and then a game for the Sega Saturn. In this series, I was delighted to really dive into, and I would love to spotlight on this in the future. It's Albert Odyssey. And the music is so good, and it was kind of a chance for Naoki Kodaka to stretch his muscles a little bit and do something that he had never done before and just kill it, really. Just did a great job. These are RPG games, right? So the music is a lot more reminiscent of the Square games, such as Final Fantasy. Let's play a track from the first game, Albert Odyssey, for the Super Famicom. This is The Road Walked by Heroes, composed by Naoki Kodaka. Yes, we are in a new era of Naoki Kodaka music here. This is The Road Walked by Heroes for the RPG game Albert Odyssey.
I imagine there was also a lot of influence of really trying to kind of sound like The Legend of Zelda.
Absolutely.
In just kind of this classic
orchestral
fanfare.
Yeah, I guess the easiest way to sum it up is it's orchestral style music.
Yeah, I mean, really, not only just with the benefit of those instrument samples on the Super Famicom, but really the writing itself, mm-hmm. all of those kind of ornaments and flourishes to the melody feel very trumpet-centric. They really sound like brass instruments. And then that B section with the strings is very lyrical.
It's good string writing. And you know what I mean here? It's so clear that he sat down and wrote this specifically for these parts. And
totally.
And it was something that was crafted. And that's so fun to hear, because it was something that he hadn't had the opportunity to do at this point. You know, we haven't heard Super NES Kodaka music today. This is the first
time.
What's
so fun, this is again what I'm saying about he's always doing things in service of the project, but the thing I love about video game music is that the gestures can be so pure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're doing this RPG game. Nowadays, if we think of something, it has to be, you know, music has to be so subtle and kind of sit in the background. But that back then, you can just write this in-your-face orchestral fanfare with a very pure melody. Like,
yeah.
The gestures are so broad, and it really, I think it was such a great opportunity for composers to sort of flex and stretch their wings. You know, something we have to mention, obviously, is that this piece is in the Dorian mode, which kind of fits perfectly with what we were talking about last week about the use of modes to have that heroic
nobility,
medieval, timeless fable
and
quality.
A lot
to
of
it.
The music of the series is in Dorian mode as well. Guys, let's move on to maybe my favorite entry in the series, Albert Odyssey 2. I was blown away by the score, also for the Super Famicom, came out in 1994. Let's take a listen to two tracks because I was so moved by this. This first one is called New Sunlight. Will made a great point. How is this not track of the week? I thought about it, but it felt wrong to not do an NES, you know, track for track of the week. But guys, I would love to come back to this and do an Albert Odyssey episode because I was so blown away by this score.
Marty, if you're listening, isn't this incredible? Oh my God.
Well, Marty, but I knew you, you know, because one of the things is like a lot of times when I prepare these playlists, I want to try to find tracks I know Will enjoy while recording.
God, I'm completely smitten. I mean, when I first heard that kind of sequential melody idea, I felt like, oh, this is very influenced by Theme of Love from Final Fantasy IV.
But more
I don't
than
actually
that,
know the time frame. Did this come out?
94.
So yeah, it's possible it came up before or after. But anyways, so I was feeling like, oh, this is, you know, this is more of like a Final Fantasy influence. But when I hear how far this goes harmonically, it really feels like old Broadway. Like this, it sounds like a Richard Rodgers theme, not just in terms of the kind of melodic sequence that it goes through, but a lot of those sophisticated chords, some of those beautiful diminished chords, and the way everything is voiced, it really feels like you're getting music from a different era. I mean, it's so gorgeous.
It's
when we
amazing.
Got to that B section, I was completely smitten, because it's the kind of thing that I think a lot of composers of video game music at this time were very influenced by old Broadway, by musical theater,
but they didn't
show
always
tunes.
Go to the depths.
Well, I don't think they always had the music theory sophistication in terms of how everything ought to be orchestrated and voiced and everything. But when you hear this, it's like, okay, you're choosing to bite off a lot. You know, this you're taking a big swing, and
he
knocked
delivers.
It out of the park.
Well, it's also worth noting that this was a solo score, so he was working on this by himself, and he did an amazing job here with the part writing, the implementation. Even if you talk about implementation, it sounds, you know, like a seasoned composer.
I want to hear the Naoki Kodaka musical or film score for that matter.
Yeah, guys, we're going to have to do an Albert Odyssey episode at some point, just because the music's so great. All right, one more track from Albert Odyssey 2. Will, you're going to love this as well. This is called Land of Frozen Forest. Enjoy. Guys are enjoying Land of Frozen Forest from the Super Famicom game Albert Odyssey 2 by the wonderful composer Naoki Kodaka.
Koji Kondo, Yasunori Mitsuda, Nobuo Uematsu, and Naoki Kodaka. He's up there with some of the best 16-bit writing I've ever heard.
And
this
is
absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
From a melodic standpoint, from the perspective of the harmony, from how even on the Super Nintendo platform, which allows you to have more channels, how restrained it is in terms of the number of voices, and how contrapuntal everything is. It's able to be sparse and rich and so much dynamicism.
It's so clear to me. I totally agree with you that this is up there with the absolute heavy hitters on the Super Nintendo, but it's so clear to me that it wasn't because, you know, it's like those people had, you know, more games and more time. Like, this guy had this talent inside of him, and he happened to have the opportunity to do two Super Famicom games instead of 9 or 12, you know? So it's
right.
like that's all he had, and he absolutely took it seriously and delivered something that lives up. For whatever reason, these games don't live up as much.
Sure.
Like when we think about the legendary RPGs on the Super NES, Albert Odyssey,
yeah,
it just doesn't come up. But musically, especially the second game, Albert Odyssey 2, it is exquisite.
The
and,
thing that's so...
Oh, I love it.
Incredible is that I think... I mean, there's a lot of... wonderful RPG soundtracks on the Super Nintendo that yeah. have this quasi-orchestral sound. And a lot of times there's great themes and really good writing. And in very few cases, it really feels like it's up to a legitimate orchestral standard in terms of the arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
But not often. Most of the times, it's like the musical ideas are there and the instruments are right. But, you know, and when it comes to the intricacies of the voicing and the writing, it doesn't feel like the real thing. But what's so amazing to me about this is... I feel like every gesture he's making has so much purpose in craft. It's
well,
it's
guys,
so gorgeous.
We're all very lucky because we get to keep going for the last game of the day. It's Albert Odyssey Gaiden, which came out for the Sega Saturn. And for the first time today, we get to hear Naoki Kodaka have the luxury to use real instruments. We have real performance here. There's violin in certain tracks. There's flute. There's oboe in certain tracks. Wonderful soundtrack here for the Sega Saturn, and it's just a really good way to kind of end our day here. So let's play two tracks from Albert Odyssey Gaiden. We're going to start off with Main Theme 1. Absolutely gorgeous stuff there. You guys are listening to Main Theme 1 from Albert Odyssey Gaiden for the Sega Saturn. And this is composed by Naoki Kodaka. And what's so sad is this makes me feel like he was just reaching this new stride and then he stopped composing for games. It makes me quite sad. But this music makes me quite happy.
Yeah, I love those diminished chords. That violin performance is really lovely. And I love the kind
so
of
syrupy
90s production, which is so kind of corny, but mixed with the beautiful composition and the wonderful performance. It's definitely something to behold. A great melody. And again, expertly harmonized, so tasteful and... Yeah, it really is a shame that this man stopped composing, but what a wonderful way to celebrate his career. When
yeah,
you think
this
of
game...
where we started with that Blaster Master track,
yeah.
Again, an example of a phenomenal, timeless melody, but definitely, again, much like this, a product of its era. And when you think of how his music has changed and how he as a composer has really been a servant to the medium of games.
Well, I'm excited because this game was released also in Japan and North America. So finally, you know, audiences over here were able to hear more Kodaka music because for years, you know, he was doing those Super Famicom games. And, you know, over here we were, you know, if someone happened to be a fan of him at that time, they weren't able to hear anything. So this came out in 1996, and it is chronologically the last game of the day, which is crazy that the first game we started with, Dead Zone 1986, only a decade and think of all he accomplished. And so much of that was in the span of like 2 years, two or yeah. 3 years. So, all right, one more track to wrap the day up here from Albert Odyssey Gaiden. Let's play Mysterioso. Speak for myself and Will that we had a wonderful time exploring the music of Naoki Kodaka. You know, it's just asking for a good episode, because anytime you have 20 tracks composed by this gentleman, we picked the best stuff he did in his career. It's hard to mess this up. I mean, we had such a good time, and you know, a lot of these tracks we've played before, but you know, this one, for example, we haven't played for years, so to revisit some of this stuff was definitely worthwhile, and now we have this great focus on this gentleman.
I almost wish he didn't work for Sunsoft. I think if mm-hmm. he had worked for a more successful developer, he'd still be employed today gainfully.
Man, I really want to try to find out a way to try to contact this gentleman, because he composed some of my favorite video game music.
At the very least, encourage him to continue composing, because he's just a genius.
It's also sad to me to know that it's possible he might not know that people love his music all around the world. You know,
right.
There are people that are really into
this
music.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you speaking with Manami Matsumae, who we think is, you know, one of the all-time greats,
yeah.
one of the mothers of game music, and she's so humble, and you get the feeling like, wow, does she even realize the impact she's had? And you think of Koji Kondo, in seeing in interviews with him how humble he is,
yep.
and how it seems like, wow, you don't realize the impact
I would actually
on culture.
Be surprised.
Naoki Kodaka then definitely
oh no yeah
would
I would be surprised if he had any awareness at all that people in US like love his music, you
yeah
know? So yeah, guys, we're gonna play you out with the track from Hebereki. This is an NES track. It's the Staff Roll, composed by Naoki Kodaka.
We should change that, all of us. Let's find him on Twitter and tweet at him. No,
he's not on Twitter. I actually looked. There's a different person with his name that's, I'm pretty sure, is not him.
Well, we should find him out in the world and give him a hug.
Guys, next week we're gonna have a long overdue episode. It's a Patreon suggested episode on Okami, the PS2 soundtrack. So that is long overdue, so you guys can look forward to that next week. You can follow us on Twitter, subscribe to us on YouTube, like us on Facebook. We have a Patreon. You can rate and review us on iTunes. We've been getting a lot of good emails, so thanks everyone for your nice emails. If you ever have a question, next week maybe what we can try to do, I think we've gotten a few recently, we can maybe try to answer a couple questions, so
yeah.
feel free to send over some questions.
We used to start that. That was like a little segment
let's go back
that we've
to
been
that.
Doing,
yeah.
but we kind of forgot.
We'll try to answer some questions next week that we've gotten via email. Will, anything else our users can do? Our website, supermercadobros.com. We have new websites, both of us, solo websites coming very soon, and solo albums. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, to promote those.
Yeah, so, all right, guys. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann. Have a great week, everybody.
Peace out.